Blog Talk Radio.
Ça va bien. I hope we're all ça va bien-ing tonight. This is Mummy, Sybil Brunchen, and we're coming to you live, can you imagine, from Come Now, Don't Sulk. That's our live podcast every Monday night. We're part of the Here Be Monsters studio on Blog Talk Radio Network. And of course, I'm here. I'm podcasting to you live in a remote from the main line outside of Philadelphia. And I'm on the program, as I always am on these Monday nights, with my wonderful producer, my muse, my head Scientologist. She's a chemist. She's a philosopher. She's everything. My producer, Gwendolyn Holdenberry. Gwendolyn, are you on tonight?
Of course. Here I am.
And she's coming from Port St. Lucie, Florida. So here we are at one end of the country to the other. Gwendolyn's going through a terrible chill down there. The temperature has dropped to 70 degrees. Can you imagine? They're dropping dead in the streets with icicles on their noses because Florida can't stand 70. Meanwhile, outside of Philadelphia, we're having like 20 degree temperatures and everyone here is sweating like pigs because we're harding our stock up here. Listen, this is in fact Come Now, Don't Sulk, and our sponsors tonight and every week are daughtersofisis.com. That's daughters of ISIS.com, all one word, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And we encourage you during our podcast tonight, if you're on your laptops or your computers, to be sure to check out their website, daughtersofisis.com. Wonderful products. And Gwendolyn will tell us about that in just a minute. Our show is sponsored by them and by listeners like you. Thank you. And by the way, I just want to get this one other thing out of the way. Phone number for our switchboard and our operators are standing by. So please feel free to call in. It's 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. Call in tonight and chat with us. I'm so glad. I told Gwendolyn that we were very well connected because they just delivered the articles of impeachment or the article of impeachment to the Senate. And they started like at 7 o'clock at the beginning of Jeopardy. I thought, oh dear God, they're going to preempt everything. And what they'll do is they'll distract the audience, the home audience around the world. As a matter of fact, we have Australia listening in right now, New Zealand. We have listeners in Germany and in South Africa. We've got people on the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere and just about every time zone. I thought, oh my God, they're delivering the article of impeachment and no one's going to want to tune in. And isn't it lovely? The nice congressman finished the delivery, finished their incredible reading of the impeachment article. It was very compelling. I think they deserve an Oscar or a Tony or a Golden Globe or something. It was very moving. And they got finished in time, and then we were able to come on the air. So I think it's wonderful. So Gwendolyn and I were really talk about the planets being in the right position. Gwendolyn, apropos of earth-shaking matters and kingdoms being turned on their heads and everything, what is a fragrance that would be soothing yet mind-expanding for right now in this dead of winter time that we're in, which is hot, hot, hot?
Dead of winter, hot, hot, hot. Well, now you've thrown me for a loop. But you know, with everything that's going on, to bring some kind of support, I'm going to talk about the Archangel Michael. In fact, when they were swearing the kids in the other day, last week, I called on all those boys to come on down and make sure things went right. But Archangel Michael mist is a prayerful mist, of course, and it evokes a quality of strength and protection and security in the self. That's a divine spark of righting a wrong And it's blended with sweetgrass and jasmine and lang lang and some cassia or cinnamon bark and clove. It's a definite spray that you would want to put on the clothing and not on the skin. Firmness of faith and our perception of the future. So I'm going to suggest Archangel Michael. He's a very popular friend that walks away from my bench a lot. So, and by the way, we have a caller standing by, Mommy.
Okay, but before we do that, and I do want to take that call, but I just want to say, so they can find, our customers, our listeners can find that on the website tonight and order that.
Yes.
That fragrance.
Go over to daughtersofisis.com and hit mists and sprays and scroll down a bit, and you'll find all four archangels.
That's wonderful. It sounds like a spicy fragrance, floral but spicy also. Am I wrong or am I misinterpreting that with the clove? And
no, the spice is like a spike in the midst of flowers. It's
jasmine is absolutely just heartbreaking. I find that jasmine, gardenia, I find those fragrances, especially those tropical fragrances, plumeria, I find them absolutely overwhelming. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean in a wonderful way. But I can imagine the clove and the ylang ylang adding a spice quality to that could be very interesting. So I dare say if I get some of it, Gwendolyn, you're going to have to talk me out of drinking it. You know how Mummy gets with a good fragrance. I do bad things. All right, I'm sick. I'm sick and I have a problem. I'm admitting it. And I've gone to AA and I've stood up in front of strangers and said, "Hi, my name is Sybil Brunchen. I drink fine fragrances. I'm sorry." And they have been gentle with me and welcomed me. And so anyway, should we take our call? Let's take our caller.
Okay, I'm opening the mic right now, and we have a local by my standards caller.
Yes, Pamela?
Hello. No, it's not Pamela. This is West Palm Beach.
Ron
West
Fine.
Palm Beach.
From yesterday, you invited me on the show. I'm here.
Professor Ron.
I believe it. I'm going to let my producer introduce you to all of our home listeners right now. Gwendolyn, take it away.
Well, our online caller is the co-host of our Sunday show, which is a progressive political roundtable. And this is the presidential author and progressive professor, Ronald Feynman, who is coming to us from Boca Raton, a mother of the rat.
Professor, I'm going to address you as professor. Professor, first of all, I'm thrilled that you changed your dinner plans for us and that you joined us, because as of last night, you thought you were going to be too busy to join us, that you were going
to
come in on another Monday.
I want to tell you, my son's congressman, Jamie Raskin, is the big hero. He's the one who's the head of that committee to bring Donald Trump to trial. So this is his congressman. He just lost his son, unfortunately, on New Year's Eve. It's really sad, but he's a very professional guy, Jamie Raskin of Maryland, and he's leading this charge against Donald Trump.
Yeah, how did Raskin lose his son? I'm sorry, how did his son
He
lose his
committed
life?
Suicide.
Oh, that's terrible.
25-year-old student at Harvard Law, but he had depression. Originally, when they eventually died, they didn't say, and then later it came out that he had committed suicide. They didn't say how, but that was so depressing. But 6 days later, he was involved with the incident on January 6th, and he had to deal with this. What a week he had. But he's ahead of the whole group of nine that is going to bring the charge against Donald Trump. So,
dear God, dear God.
I know he's really
God.
A great congressman. I really appreciate it.
Oh, golly, my God. That's just amazing that he did that he was able to function through this. I know
unusual.
That all of us are sending all our best wishes and warmest wishes for peace and comfort to him.
I wanted to mention that I've been reading and hearing an awful lot about a lot of young people because of the pandemic are somehow so depressed there's more and more suicides occurring. I don't know if it's related to the pandemic why this happened, but it's so depressing, the level of mental depression that this pandemic has brought about, and it's hard on everyone, even those who would never even think of that.
it's ironic that you mentioned Jamie Raskin, because ironically, like most radio celebrities, I have a wall of television screens going right now in front of me, and Jamie Raskin actually is live on MSNBC being interviewed right now.
I turned off MSNBC to talk to you.
Well, you can turn it on and then turn on your closed caption option, and yes, you'll be able to see him. He's being interviewed right now, and I just have to say that when you look at that face, and he's talking right now, his eyes are so expressive of deep, deep sadness. So you can look at him and you can see that he's in a split screen right now with the most horrific video of the storming of the Capitol, you know, the rioting. And by the way, I want to ask my home listeners and our listeners and our fans to stop calling them don't call them demonstrators, and do not call them insurrectionists. They are rioters or thugs. Let's just call it exactly what they are. They're thugs and murderers. So that's what they are. Yeah. Traitors.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that Jamie Raskin looked just like him. He had the same appearance, which is even more ironic that, you know, he doesn't look like the mother. He looked more like Jamie. It's unbelievable. It hits me hard because, you know, I
imagine that Raskin is doing this right now. So I'm so glad that you called in tonight, because our show veers from recipes for cookies and all sorts of things and wonderful things. And we have wonderful listeners among our family of listeners. But I'm thrilled to have you on tonight because, with the delivery of those articles, we may as well steer our show, which I almost renamed Carte Blanche because it covers everything. Your show on Sunday is much more political and states that. It's a progressive Sunday show. You're not going to talk about flower arranging. Our show is kind of like whatever goes, you know. And so tonight, since you're calling in, let's go for it. The articles of impeachment were just delivered. Tell us what you think. First of all, what do you think the chances are of – how do I phrase this?
I'm eviction?
First of all, what are the chances of Donald Trump being impeached? Go.
Well, he has been impeached. That's what people
convicted.
He was not convicted the first time, and now this second time. It's the second time he's been impeached. But it does require a 2/3 vote of those present and voting, theoretically 67 senators out of 100, unless some of them don't vote. Now, I want to point out, I'm wondering about the president pro tempore of the Senate, who is the presiding officer of the trial, unlike the Chief Justice in the other trial, because Trump is not president now. It's Patrick Leahy of Vermont, who's 80 years old, longest serving member of the Senate since 1974. I think he's fifth longest serving ever. And if he has another term, he'll probably be maybe the longest serving, over 50 years. He's had like 46 years. I'm not sure if he's presiding, if he can vote. So I don't know I'm not sure. That's a question I'm wondering about. If you're presiding, can you also vote? The Chief Justice doesn't vote in an impeachment trial. So can the president pro tempore presiding vote? So I think not. So that makes it everybody voted 99 votes, which means 66 votes would be needed. But if that's the case, since Leahy would not be voting, there would only be 49 Democrats. He still would need 17 Republicans. And I really don't think it's going to occur. That's an awful lot. I could see 6 or 7 or 8 voting for it. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska voting yes, and Susan Collins of Maine, even though I really despise her because she's so fit, you know, so hard to understand her back and forth views. But
well, that's why I call her Snoozin' Collins. I mean, to me, she's extraneous. She's irrelevant.
But she's a voter, and I think she will vote. And Mitt Romney and Ben Sasse and Rob Portman now is deciding not to run for another term. I think he's going to do it. That's 5. I think there's a few others, but I don't think there's going to be 17. No, I don't think so.
I'm going to ask you another technical question, because this is something that people have wondered. Okay, one way that senators, if I'm not mistaken, can get out of and it's specious, it's very cynical, but one way they can get out of voting is to not be present. So someone could technically be a senator and definitely not want to vote for conviction, but could get out of voting at all by simply not being there. Is that not true?
That's true. And if enough senators decided not to vote, he wouldn't have to have 17 Republicans to join the Democrats.
Exactly.
I mean, in theory, if 1/3, if 30 of the Republican senators didn't vote and it was only 69 voting, let's say, then you would only need, what's 2/3 of 69? I'm trying, 46. I mean, it could happen if they chose not to vote, then actually he could be removed. It's true. I mean, he's not removed because he's removed. I mean, he could be banned from running for president again or any other public office. But I don't know.
That's called a quorum. Isn't that called a quorum?
Yes.
That's
yes,
a quorum. So. See, Mummy's rather smart. I pretend to be stupid, but I'm actually rather intelligent.
Gentlemen, somebody you forgot to mention who I think will definitely be putting a Republican vote. Oops, never mind. She's in the House, not the Senate. Sorry.
Who are you talking about?
Who were you thinking of?
Oh, I was thinking of somebody.
Liz Cheney?
Yeah, I would have slapped her on the street before this, but now I'll just salute her walking by.
That reminds me of another woman senator, Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, I think probably would vote yes also. But the only way it could happen is if like 1/3 of the Republicans or maybe about 30 of the Republicans chose to stay out, then actually you wouldn't have to have 67 votes. You could have 50 or 49 Democrats, not counting Leahy, because I don't know if he could vote, and you would only need a small number of Republicans. But I don't think that's going to happen. And
now,
the problem,
if I may interrupt, is that by staying out, by staying back in butt poke Wyoming or nose pick Arkansas, whatever, by staying home and not voting, they technically would not have convicted Trump, but their followers, okay, their gang back home would still being infuriated because they had not voted to save Trump. So not saving him is as bad as convicting him by their standards. And they would be right that the evading the vote that day would not be – that doesn't spare anyone. You know, only a moron would say, oh, well, he wasn't there, so I guess he couldn't vote. Well, he wasn't judging a pie-eating contest in butt poke. You know, he was supposed to be in the Senate chamber and vote for your president and support him, but he didn't because, like Pontius Pilate, he was washing his hands saying, listen, I don't want to get involved in this. I always think that image of Pontius Pilate saying, look, I've tried to save this guy over and over again, and you people are determined to crucify him. I wash my hands of the whole thing because he's determined to be martyred, and you people are determined to kill him, and I just would like to have a nice quiet Roman orgy in my palace. I mean, that Pontius Pilate thing is so amazing. I wash my hands of the whole thing. So these senators, they're not going to accomplish anything by not voting and hoping that, you know, the Democrats will take all the heat. I'm with you, though, Professor. I don't see 17 Republicans finding a conscience and being concerned about the GOP party.
Of these people staying home next, you know, not voting. I want to point out that has happened before. The first Jewish Supreme Court Justice, Louis Brandeis, it was 4 months till he was confirmed, the longest time ever up to that time for a Supreme Court nominee. It was because of his religion, and it ended up about 30 senators did not vote. And therefore, he got through, but he might not have gotten through if they all voted, you know, ones who didn't want to have him. So it's not a requirement that everybody votes. It might be embarrassing, but they could stay home. No, not stay home. They could just not vote, not be present.
But, of course, back then they didn't have Fox Network and the ghost of Roger Ailes haunting the country. So Fox Network, of course, would completely urge those voters back in butt poke and nose pick to throw their senators on the bonfire, you know, of conservatism, because it was like, well, you didn't vote for your president, so your absenteeism was what condemned him. Another question I want to ask you, Professor, is this. This was the second of three parts. So we agree that Trump will probably not be convicted there. It won't happen. Okay.
Yes, unfortunately.
Do you think, so by extension then, Tom Cornyn and Nosepick Cotton from Arkansas, whatever their names are, they will not be held responsible either for the fact that they supported the lie, that they supported the whole electoral, stonewalling, and that they supported even the rioters in their language. They will not be held responsible either. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, it'll be dependent on what the voters decide the next time these people come up for election. Who knows? I think in some cases they might be held accountable, but probably not in most. No, that's the saddest thing.
So that,
most
so
likely,
I agree.
But it might be some.
I agree with you. I think that their home bases of nightmare people are their basket of deplorable voters back home. Hillary was right. She said they were a basket of deplorables, and then she apologized
later. Well, she was
later.
Right. She absolutely was right. I want to mention, by the way, Arkansas is in the news. You know, we talk about Tom Cotton, who really scares me because he backed what Trump did, you know, with that display of military force when he went to the church in June, you know, and they called him.
Yes.
And he said that he was perfectly right to do that. And not many senators actually said that, but he did. But now, if it's left up to the way they want things, who would be the governor of Arkansas in 2023? Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Astounding. Astounding.
A liar. I wrote on Facebook, a massive liar. And, of course, her father, I have to admit, way back in 07-08, when Mike Huckabee was the governor of Arkansas, at the time I thought, I wouldn't vote for him, but he seemed like it wasn't too bad. And then he went off the deep end. He really got worse. Just like Rudy Giuliani was ahead of the primaries, or you know, before the primaries, but you know, in the speculation in 07. And it wasn't that I liked him, but I thought, well, among the bunch, not too bad. Oh my God, if they both got off the deep end, and so many others. Some of them were sort of like not that horrible comparatively. Now they're just disgraceful.
Well, you're bringing up. First of all, I'm thrilled that you called in. Thank you so much. But you're bringing up and I love your brain, and I love your history because I love that too. But right now, you're spinning a lazy Susan on our table of delectable treats, and it's going by quickly. And I'm trying to. I want to get back to everything you're saying, especially Giuliani. But let's go back to Huckabee. The thought of her being the governor of Arkansas is just flabbergasting. I mean, it's amazing. And again, you can't blame her. This is a girl who hasn't been pretty in her life for 10 minutes. And when you have a face, no, let me finish. When you have a face that has the San Andreas Fault moving up the middle of it, how could there ever be a coordinated thought or any kind of morality in there? It's just, She's a catastrophe, and poor thing, she really is too homely to be that evil. A girl that homely should really make an effort to be sweeter and better natured, because only the beautiful can afford to really be evil, and she just doesn't make the grade. So that's one thing I have to say about her. I want to just say one thing about this. Now, where do you live, Professor?
In Boca Raton, Florida, in Palm Beach County.
Now, did you ever live in New York City?
Why would you think that? My life, 1989.
I'll tell you why.
Of course, for 45 years.
Did you ever live in New York City?
Yes, in Queens County.
Okay, for how long?
In Queens, I lived in Nassau. I was born in Queens. Actually, it's interesting. I was born in Jamaica, Queens, at Jamaica Hospital, and that's where Donald Trump was born a year and a half later.
Okay, so
it was
a rhetorical question.
And I joke with people who don't know the difference in age. I said we were switched at birth, and they laugh.
Well, it was a rhetorical question, and this is why I say that. It's
Queens, then Nassau, and then Queens, yes. Mostly in Queens County, yeah.
Okay, it was a rhetorical question. The reason I say this is because as a person who lived in New York for decades myself, and who most people think was born there, because my energy has always been a very New York kind of energy. My packaging is New York. My experiences are very New York. Everything is very, very New York City and very much Manhattan. You and I have known Donald Trump and Giuliani long before these latest incarnations of their careers.
Yes.
We both observed Donald Trump screwing electricians, unions, plasterers, carpenters,
yeah.
painters.
Yeah.
We saw him screwing construction projects. We saw him doing this in New Jersey, in New York, in Connecticut. And so this is old news. His gangsterism, his unwillingness to pay his bills, his desire to screw any business associate from high to low on any particular deal at any particular moment, we've seen this for years. Do you agree?
Yes, plus also his private life stories, yes.
Okay. Secondly, Giuliani. Okay, we both experienced New York, right?
Yes.
We both experienced New York when it was slummy, so to speak. Okay? We
yes.
both experienced New York when it was slummy. And I just want to say that we know that when Giuliani came to office as the mayor, he was quote unquote gentrifying the city.
Yeah.
He wasn't gentrifying. He didn't use that language. He used that he was cleaning it up. But
right.
you and Gwendolyn and I remember that as slummy, quote unquote, as New York was, it was also enchanting. It
yeah.
was artistic and creative and eccentric and varied. It was all different kinds of people mixing and doing. Did you have to have your radar up when you walked down the street? Yeah, but you have to have your radar up when you're walking down streets in Toledo, Ohio. New York was not – people latched on to Kitty Genovese and the recession
oh, yes,
of
I 1973 remember that.
And 74. They latched on to Gerald Ford telling the city to drop dead. And they obsessed over that, and they didn't know or realize that every neighborhood was enchanting as much as Greenwich Village was.
Yeah, can I just intervene there to say what the New York Daily News published actually was not correct. Gerald Ford never used the term drop dead.
Yes, I know. But, Professor,
yeah.
I know. Okay,
yeah.
All right, you clarify it. But
and Gerald Ford on that. You know, yeah.
I know. I love you. But when – okay, you go ahead and do that. But I just want to say that that's – you're nitpicking on a technicality. The basic thing was that the city was left to its own devices, that people
yes.
were basically saying New York's finished and it's ruined. It'll never be anything. And that's what my point was. Okay. So I know technically you're absolutely right, but the overarching thing then was that the city was finished. And that's how this country saw New York City. The Midwest thought of New York City, forgetting the Midwest, Sayville, Long Island, thought of New York City as too dangerous to visit. I have
yes,
friends
I remember
in Sayville,
that.
Out on Long Island, who said that they did not go to New York City and still don't because it's, quote unquote, too dangerous to go to. They've still got this Kitty Genovese thing going in their heads. That Republican
yeah.
Long Island tape is playing. My point being that you and I saw that Giuliani was only a good mayor when his hands were busy. When his hands were not busy, he did things like picked on the hot dog sellers down in Wall Street. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was like he wanted to close down all the hot dog stands, the rolling carts, and get rid of them. And the people that overruled that were the Wall Street stockbrokers who said, what are you doing? We don't have time for martini lunches. We run down to the sidewalk. We grab some hot dogs. We grab a Diet Coke. We go back to our desks. Why are you harassing hot dog salesmen? He says, what are you doing? You need to be doing more important things than that. And he was fine if he was busy. But if he wasn't busy, he created terrible problems, most especially for working people. And so these two people, Trump and Giuliani, for you, a New Yorker, for Gwendolyn, a former New Yorker, for me, a former New Yorker, these people were always big trouble. And so it's very interesting to see them now in the middle of catastrophes. And the rest of the country is going, who knew? Who knew? You should have talked to your New York friends like the professor and Gwendolyn and me, because I tried to tell my friends in the Midwest, do not vote for this man. He is crazy. Crazy is too endearing a word. He is a psychopath. He's a sociopath with orange hair.
Yeah, sadly, I knew people in New York City who thought David Dinkins was a terrible mayor, and I said, no, he was not a terrible mayor, but I know why they said that, because they were bigots, because he was black, because I think he was a gentleman. He just passed away recently.
Jimmy Carter was not a bad president. He was a nice man. He was a nice, decent man in the wrong place at the wrong time for that particular catastrophe, the Iran, you know, hostage crisis and all of that. But, I mean, he's shown who he is. How old is he? He's 111.
86.
He still is out. He still is out.
His wife's born and Walter Mondale is still alive 40 years after the presidency. It's the longest ever. But I'm saying David Dinkins is someone I think that hasn't gotten a fair shake. He just passed away.
No.
And I think he deserves a better image than he has for many people, you know.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah.
My third question to you is this, because we agree on the fact that Trump will probably get away with it, that Cotton and his gang will get away with it, that Rubio, all of the – I mean, it's, I don't know how you two live with Rubio. But
well, we also have to live with Scott, the former governor, who's the other senator. I think he's worse than Rubio. I agree with you. In fact, I've joked with people, imagine the Titanic, and you have Rubio, Scott, and Ron DeSantis. Who would you save if you could only save one? And I used to say DeSantis. But now I think I'd say Rubio because he's dumber. The other two are more dangerous, I think, than Rubio. I think DeSantis is
actually what you should do.
Scott, I love that.
Yeah, I think you should. That's a great joke. I think you should say that the answer is which one would make a better flotation device. like which one is the most likely to float so you could get off the Titanic yourself?
About save the Alamo.
What
that
is it? Go on, say it.
Airplane joke. I can't think of the whole thing, but you got the Jew, the black man, and the white man, and a Mexican on the plane, and there's only three parachutes. <There's something. laughs> I don't know, but I'm sorry, Mummy, I messed that one up badly, but. My point is, that, you know, there's just no easy way out because
right.
we think that the Senate is going to still be, because of the 50-50 margin, that it's still going to be dominant by, and true to that, I was on with my partner Murphy on the phone earlier, and she said, you know, I just read a piece that come out saying that Biden's saying we should look it over what they want to on the new bill for COVID relief, that they should do some compromising with the Republicans. I'll show you compromise. I'll bury every one of them sons of bitches in the bulkhead they call the swamp. That's what I'll do to compromise. I can't get over that. And I wish that this new president would grasp his hands on either side of that bully pulpit and take it out for a spin. You know?
Yeah.
Well, it's a difficult thing with a 50-50 Senate. That's the problem. It's not a very good situation, you know?
No, it isn't.
My third question is, we've got the president done. We've got his co-conspirators done. My third question is this. Seriously, and I said this to you last night. I said this to you both last night on your show. Wayne pointed out, he corrected me, that the man who had thrown the fire extinguisher, and by the way, I encourage people at home to go to their local high schools or local restaurants and pick up a fire extinguisher, the old-fashioned red ones that, you know, tanks off the wall. Feel the heft of it. See how heavy it is and how – first of all, just to lift it off the wall and try to use it. But imagine throwing it and hitting someone in the back of the head and watch the video of that and imagine that someone could actually throw something that heavy with enough force to make it travel that distance. And imagine that you could throw it and not kill someone. I'm telling you, if you were to drop that fire extinguisher on your foot from waist high, most people would break some metatarsals, okay? So for someone to have thrown it into a crowd and not thought that they were going to kill someone is insane, and they deserve to be executed for being too stupid to live. So first of all, you killed someone, but you're so stupid to actually claim that you didn't think you would kill someone. You're too stupid to have the right to live. But that's another discussion.
That's what I
thought was fascinating was that I don't see on the news any coverage, any rehash of this in the news. And Wayne corrected me and said, no, Sybil, they actually did catch the guy. They found him. He turned himself in, blah, 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 blah. My question to you now, apropos of him, the people that were crushing the other policemen in the doorway, the people that were using flagpoles as spears that were punched, all of this. Okay, I said that when a black man has been killed by a policeman, and you can name any one of them. I mean, all of them. There's too many to name. Their family is brought out, their wife is brought out, the mother, the father, their children are shown, potential lawsuits against the city. It's happened. The civil suits are brought out. Everything is brought out. The policemen are photographed and shown to the crowd, to the national public, as these are the policemen that have lost their jobs, are on desk duty, are not on desk duty, are held in prison now, et cetera, et cetera. That whole thing goes on. This policeman who lost his life due to a president thug and a bunch of thugs. There's no pictures. I've never seen his wife interviewed or his children. I've never seen his grieving mother and father. I've never seen anything. I've never seen the person arrested. I've never seen his face shown daily over and over again. News item, update on what, the indictment, et cetera. I've never seen any of that. And so my question now, Professor, is this. If the president's going to get away with this, and Tom Cotton and thug gang are going to get away with this, how many really, really, really of these people who did this stuff, including Moo Cow Man, right, the organic food, you know, sissy whose mother called in and said, my Johnny has to eat organic food in prison.
Oh, yes.
How many of those?
Let him starve to death.
Started it. Or as I said last night, you know what? The hunger strike thing? No. Do what they did to the incredibly brave women and force feed them. Do what they do to geese. Put a hose down his mouth and pour food, force feed him, which is what they did to the suffragettes at the turn of the century. Women refused to eat. They were taken, tied to benches, perhaps undressed. And then food was hosed into their stomachs. Your son is too stupid or willful not to eat. Oh, well, that no problem, Mrs. Moo Cow. We're simply going to hose your son on a bench. We'll simply put oatmeal into him. We'll pump oatmeal to him until he vomits. I don't know. Or aspirates it. It's ridiculous. But how many of these people do you think, Professor, are going to get away with what they did?
I think probably about half of them will have – the more serious ones probably will get some jail time, but not adequate time, no.
I agree with you.
I got to tell you, gentlemen, today I was reading the news, and it stunned me to find out that the young lady who swiped Nancy Pelosi, one of her office's laptops.
Right, yes.
Apparently just held correspondence from constituency. And was intending and made it clear to the media that she was intending to sell it to Russia, got caught, and she's out on freaking bail. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Bring Snowden home. Send her.
It was last week when she was – this was a story from a week ago that there had been rumors that she was going to sell it to the Russians. That the deal somehow fell through and it was never clear. And the person reporting her was her ex-boyfriend or husband who recognized her.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, if she had done that to the prince of Saudi Arabia, her hands would have been burned off in a bonfire in front of a cheering crowd. Thieves have their hands cut or burned off in Saudi Arabia. I mean, and she's going to get out on bond, and then she's not going to be held responsible at all. You know, they've never recovered. I don't believe they've recovered the laptop either. I think that she claimed at some point that she threw it into a lake or that she destroyed it. But it's – and then there was some rumor I remember hearing, and again, you can correct me on this, that the laptop was innocent, that it was just, you know, grandma stuff and that it wasn't –
I hope it was only that. Who knows?
Not in Nancy Pelosi's office. I'm sure that it was a serious piece of equipment.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, talking about that, separate from this, how about that kid, Kyle Rittenhouse, who was released before his trial after killing two people in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And I understand now there was a story that said he's going around on a tour about, you know, with white supremacist groups making speeches or something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't quite get the whole thing because I've been busy today. But apparently he's been allowed to speak to white supremacist groups. This kid should not be out of jail. He should be in prison right now waiting trial.
He should be. He's a murder suspect. He openly carried it out. I saw the film, the footage. But that's America. And you know what? I happen to think that the ACLU put out a blurb on saying as much as it's his right, free speech, to, you know, to express his opinion about the state of society and whatnot. That's something we have to contend with. It's the other side of the coin here with that. While we know that these people were indeed, basically, I think they're going to be charged for insurrection, aren't they?
I would hope so, but who knows, you know.
But see, if the president gets away with it, and he can somehow slip out of it by saying, well, I didn't know that they were going to burn down the Capitol. And if he can say, well, this is part of my ability to have free speech, then this is what's so fascinating to me, because the Democratic Party went through a real catastrophe in the late 60s and then into the 70s, because it was the party of Southern Dixiecrats and extreme bigotry and the KKK and Catholic haters and Jew haters and black haters. But it was also the party of Jewish intellectuals from Ivy League schools. So the Republican Party had it easy, because if you were Dwight Eisenhower and Mamie Eisenhower, if you were polite and white, and you were kind of a nice, hardworking person, and if you were Ozzie and Harriet and Donna Reed and Father Knows Best,
I used
you
to love Donna Reed,
that homogenous oatmeal, you know, Campbell soup center.
I loved Bachelor Father.
Right, but if
I
loved
Donna Reed. The Donna Reed Show.
The problem for the
American
Democrats
family will be thought.
But if you were the Democrats, and that's why Lyndon Johnson was brilliant, because he sort of managed to corral all these incredibly feral cats into one sort of, you know, pen and say, well, I know you hate blacks and you're Jewish and you're from Harvard and you sort of corralled them together and sort of almost got them working together until finally, you know, between Reagan and Goldwater and everything, the Republicans inherited whole bigoted wings of the Democratic Party. And that's
the Republican Party today is like the Southern Democrats of the Civil War period. Switched around.
That's
the Republicans were the party of black freedom and also citizenship and the right to vote. And now look what they are.
That was my point, was that the Republicans gloated over that. The Republicans inherited all of that. They inherited the Sun Belt. They took all those disenchanted and disenfranchised white Southern voters who felt betrayed by the Northern intellectuals, and they scooped them in. They just had to sort of convince them to call themselves Republicans, because labeling and packaging is very important to Americans. Americans like knowing that oatmeal is oatmeal and cereal is cereal. So those Southern Democrats had to, after generations of being Democrats through the Civil War and everything, they had to sort of learn to say no, and they would gag through it too. I'm a Republican. And it was like they were Reagan, they were George Bush Republicans. They became Republicans. Well, now the shoe is on the other foot. There's not so much gloating anymore because the Republican Party is being forced to look into that mirror, the true mirror on the wall, like in Snow White, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? They're having to face the fact that they are, in fact, hillbilly, toothless, illiterate, KKK, NRA, Nazis, and Wall Street, fanfanfan, one percenters in gated communities, that they are that. And that is a lot of stuff. That's a lot of range to cover. A through Z in the alphabet is an awful lot to ask one party to cover. The Democrats are as disparate as they are. They're not going through the identity crisis that the Republicans are. Not quite. And this is going to be interesting to see. What are the Republicans going to do? Tom Cotton can snicker down, you know, all he wants and say, I'm going to stick with Donald Trump and Trumpism and everything. But in 4 years, in 6 years, in 8 years, every time it's election time, what are these Republicans going to look at? And apropos of what you said, Professor, because I love 19th century history in America, how many Whig, know-nothing, all those kooky parties that Americans don't study. They don't. They just go, well, haven't we always been Democrats and Republicans? Like, no, you idiot.
Oh. I would have been a Whig in the 1840s and 1850s. Henry Clay, Daniel Webster, John Quincy Adams, Abraham Lincoln, not a bad group.
Well, but even Lincoln, I mean, people forget that the Republican Party broke away and that Lincoln was that first president of the Republican, the new Republican Party, because you had the Whigs and you had the know-nothings and you had all these different names. So it's the Soil Party, Free Soil Party, all of that.
I would have definitely been a Free Soil. I tell my students that. The Free Soil Party of 1848 I would have voted for.
Right. But those crazy incarnations and the fact that how many presidents did we go through between Andrew Jackson and Abraham Lincoln? I mean, we had like 9 presidents or something in that short a period of time.
Exactly
partly
right.
Because William Henry Harrison died and partly because Zachary Taylor died, but also because
John Tyler,
no one got
the first vice president to become president during a term and then ended up being a traitor in the Civil War, joining the Confederate States. Yeah.
So each one of them was kind of a loser. The best of them that you and I agree on is James Polk. And even he was despised by people like Lincoln for starting the Mexican-American War.
And because he also bought and sold slaves while president.
Oh, well, yeah, but he couldn't have been the only one.
No, but I gather that I think I read that he bought in office, not so much before or after. He bought in, well, because he died right after, 105 days later. He only had 50, like 3.5 months before he died. No, but he bought and sold slave children while he was president.
He knew that he was sick. Apparently, he knew that he was sick, and he said that he wanted to achieve whatever he could in one term. There's a couple of things about James Polk that actually were kind of, I won't say noble, but they were kind of desirable. He was kind of the best of those, that incredible bag of.
But he was the one that stands out between Jackson, who I don't like, but it's important, and Lincoln. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. He was the hardest working president. I loved learning that James Polk, it's incredible, talk about OCD. He's the president who reviewed all of his cabinet's work every day after work when everyone would go home.
He
would
slept.
Review and do all of their homework, all of their work, and cross their T's, dot their I's, review what they had done, everything, before he went to bed. So he literally was working not only as the president, but as the vice president and all of the different cabinet members.
Well, you know, we have a modern president that was seen as a workaholic. Jimmy Carter was a workaholic, too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Anyway, back to this. The whole thing of the Republican Party is facing a very much deserved soul-searching and I hope woodshed beating. I hope that they're taken to the woodshed and thoroughly, you know, given the rod, because we're on the verge of, I think, either a changed party or a third party. And I'm not talking about a Ross Perot or a John Anderson party. I'm talking about like a really serious third party.
I liked Anderson, by the way, in 1980. I thought he really came across very well. And I discovered my PhD dissertation advisor, Arthur Schlesinger Jr., and also Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis voted for Anderson in 1980.
Yes, I'd forgotten that. That's true.
I
will never forget when Anderson
turned that. I didn't like Carter that much then. I like him more now. I voted for him twice, but I didn't care for him at that point because I couldn't get used to a Southern accent.
I think first guest vote was Carter.
If I wasn't thrilled by him, I wanted Frank Church or Birch Bayh in 1976, but they didn't get that far. I liked them more, Birch Bayh and Frank Church.
Well, I'm going to confess something. I've confessed it before, so I'm ready for you both to gasp. Although Gwendolyn already
voted for Ford, huh?
I voted for Richard Nixon, and I voted for Richard Nixon twice. And
oh my God!
I admit this. Well, I came from a Republican. I came from an Eisenhower.
I loved Humphrey was
Teddy
my original
Roosevelt.
Hero.
Let me finish. I came
he was
from
a professor,
New
like I was coming.
I came from a New England, Ohio. Republican family, very old Republican family. And, you know, when I found that out, I was mortified to find out that my grandparents did not trust Roosevelt, which is amazing to me. But I came from that tradition of Eisenhower. I came from polite Republican people who were progressive, but progressive the way Republicans were progressive. They were not progressive like Adlai Stevenson was progressive. However, and I voted for Richard Nixon, and I voted for him twice. But I also, on his second term, was already watching as he unraveled, and I was living in New York and watching as that whole Watergate unraveled more and more and more, and was mortified and had to admit to friends and different people that I was wrong, that I had voted for a man who turned out to be, though very gifted and very intelligent and very respected by foreign leaders and everything, even
was,
to the day he died. He had character flaws. Okay, so I admit that. I then will admit something else, okay? I did vote for Ronald Reagan once.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I voted for Ronald Reagan once, and
Mommy
I felt that he was. What is it?
Mommy, you never read Hunter S. Thompson, did you?
I voted for him because at the time I felt that Jimmy Carter was a nice man, but I did not feel that he was strong enough or vibrant enough. And of course, within it wasn't Reagan's stand on AIDS that turned me off. It was Ronald Reagan's shocking financial, his extravagant, you know, the deficit ballooning. The fact that the Republican Party finally was clearly the party of extraordinary wastefulness, and that they had claimed for decades that it was Democrats that were wasteful, when in fact Republicans were the much more extravagant and foolish and foolhardy.
You know, I have a shirt that I wear, and people nod and smile. I say, Democrats cleaning up Republican messes since 1933.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that. And I agree with that, too. I do agree with that, because even though I was doing those things, I knew that Hoover's foolishness in the face of the crash and the depression, it was just unforgivable. Anyway, what I do think is funny is that people today will not admit that they made a grotesque error. By the way, that was the end of my Republican voting.
You voted for Ford over Carter in 76?
I voted for Reagan once. And then I did not vote for him a second time.
What
and
about
I
Gerald Ford in 76 against Carter?
No.
You voted for Carter?
You know something? I don't remember if I voted for Jerry Ford. Yeah. I think that I was – I don't think I voted.
Oh, boy.
I've got to tell you, I did not vote then. I was very disenchanted. And I voted for Reagan, and I did not vote – for Reagan for a second time.
I
did not vote for George Bush because I had wanted no part of the Republic. That was the end of my affair with the Republicans, was Reagan second term, George Bush the elder,
And then I voted for Clinton, and I voted for Clinton twice. And my dismay, as bad as, you know, as wonderful as Clinton was and as compelling, and I hosted a couple of big charities, one where Clinton was the guest of honor and a second one where Hillary Clinton was the guest of honor. I emceed those as big charity events for the gay community. As bad as Clinton was, it still dismays me that Clinton, being an alpha male, would sell his soul for a blowjob under the desk with that moron. And that his and I believe that his blowjob sunk both Hillary and Al Gore's careers. They were stained forever. Hillary Clinton has always been damaged goods because of her husband's.
Yeah, I agree.
And Al Gore lost that. That election was totally because Bill Clinton needed a blowjob from a fat, stupid bimbo.
Yeah,
and
but don't
Linda
forget
Kreb,
that Gore won the popular vote.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
that,
so
he lost the vote.
Election.
I mean, he lost the election.
Yeah.
So it's this. So you know, and then of course I haven't voted Republican. As a matter of fact, I never thought that I would do this, but I have voted a strict Democrat ticket for everything. For dog catcher, when I go into the voting booth, if they put down, if someone puts up a plate of dog poop for office on the Democratic side, I vote for it. I'll vote for anything that the Democrats say. Short of Adolf Hitler being reborn and running on a Democratic kid, I wouldn't vote for that. But a plate of dog poop running for dog catcher, I will vote for it if it's Democrat. Because to me, the Republican Party is an anagram for Nazi. Now, they're crazed. They're crazed. They're neo-fascists. They're lunatics.
And I
wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah, I wanted to say that Donald Trump, I think, is a culmination, really, of Joseph McCarthy and George Wallace combined. Can you imagine that?
And how could he not be? Professor,
yeah.
How could he not be? Look at his pal, Roy Cohn.
Yeah, who
Donald
connected
Trump
to McCarthy.
Pal
yep.
with Roy Cohn. And
but we had George
McCarthy.
Wallace, who was horrifying, and I know some people voted for George Wallace, and then they voted for, you know, for Trump. But I just couldn't understand how anybody could have voted for George Wallace when he ran in '68. You know?
Inconceivable. Inconceivable. I agree. Rob, remind me sometime to tell you about my experience with Roy Cohn. I had dinner with Roy Cohn on one occasion with Steve Rubell and a couple of other people. And I didn't realize that it was Roy Cohn at the end of the table. And then it became clear who it was and what he was doing and everything. And that's a whole story. That's a Studio 54 story. I'm looking at the time and we're out of time. I am so tickled that you would call in. And I hope that you will consider this your second home. If you don't get everything said on Sunday night, that you'll say, oh, no problem, folks. I'll be on in 24 hours, 25 hours on Come Now, Don't Salt, because I'm going to join Sybil Brunchen and Gwendolyn on Monday night at 8 o'clock. So please think of this as a second home for you, will you?
Yes, I will, yes. And, of course, Gwen is fantastic. She is just great, yes.
We're so lucky to have her as our producer, aren't we?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
It's been a delight being on the show.
I want to close our show by saying that this has indeed been Come Now, Don't Sulk. We are part of the Here Be Monsters studio with our wonderful producer and head aromatherapist, Gwendolyn Holdenberry, who continues to manage not only our network, but also our studio, rather, but also the Daughters of Isis.com. That's Daughters of Isis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. They produce our show every week. And we also are lucky to have listeners like you at home. Please tune in to Blog Talk Radio every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 Central, or your corresponding time zone. Wherever you are in the world, we're thrilled that you're listening to us live in different time zones, in different hemispheres. You are all around the world, and we are thrilled to get your feedback. So feel free to contact us anytime and call. Call in live. I know that you're having breakfast and it's summer in Australia, but you could still call in and talk to Sybil and Gwendolyn, and you can now talk to the professor who will be with us too on occasion when he can fit us into his busy schedule. You can also find us at SybilSez.com. That's SybilSez.com, SybilBrunchen.com, and on our Facebook pages and on the Sybil
Brunch and Lollipop Guild, which is a completely non-denominational, non-political page. It's a page for feeling good. And we have a new feature put together by one of our wonderful pals, Pamela Jett, who does Fabulous Food Fridays. So Fridays we do recipes and photographs and anecdotes
and
food failures.
And cocktails.
That was Count Druncula, in case you don't realize who that was, home audience. That was Gwendolyn as Count Druncula. Yes, and she's going to oversee cocktail recipes. Gwendolyn, you got to get in there with some good cocktail recipes, okay?
Okay.
I dug out a book called Vintage Cocktails, Cocktails from the 1880s through the 1930s. So I'm going to start posting amazing vintage cocktails too. So join us there and join us on Gwendolyn's pages also on Facebook. And that's our time. Thank you again, Professor. Thank you again,
Thank
Gwendolyn.
You.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We'll see you next Monday night at 8 p.m. Good night.
Good night.